You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1, registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, or 2, solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, CG Advisory Services, and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision.
Well, that's our show today. Thanks for tuning in. Welcome aboard. It's another edition of New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design, including the aforementioned Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
Who is he? What is he doing? Well, good morning. It's great to hear you all joining us. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Welcome.
To, let's see, June 1, 2023. An auspicious day, for sure. And can you, yeah, I don't know, this is summer, right?
It sure feels like it.
June. I recall so many years ago, June, it was June 7th, a magic day, when I went down there, the school just got out, ran down to the river, jumped in, we partied, you know, I was probably all of 11 years old, we just thought that was the best ever.
I thought that was going to be, I remember it so well, it was June 7th, her hair was flowing in the wind.
Not quite.
No.
Nope. Yeah, well.
All right.
Such as it is for young boys at that point.
Yeah.
More interested in, at that point, sweat. Other things, you bet. Well, it's great to have you here joining us. Thank you so much for being with us. If you do have a question of a financial nature, please call or write. That number is, Ron, if you would.
You can call us at 947-0023. That's the 231 area code, 947-0023. Or shoot a text message to 833-728-1140. That's 833-728-1140.
Eventually I have that number in my phone so I can text too as well. Yes. So joining us is Heidi Cartwright, our own RICP and managing director. Good morning, Heidi.
Good morning. And I just have to say, Ron, Your calendar is still on May. You know, there. Just wanted to say, you know, that's living in the past.
That's why you're the manager of everything.
Yeah. It's just, I'm looking right at it. I had to tell you that.
The detail meister. There we go.
Oh, it's moving it immediately.
Now we're
thank
up
you,
to
thank
date.
Thank you, Colleen, thanks. As well, offering assistance. And Deanne Jennings, Director of Operations at Prout Financial. Well, good morning and welcome to you.
Good morning. I'm so happy to be here, and thank you, and happy summer. I feel like even though it's not summer yet, I feel like us as Michiganders can just say it's summer.
It's summer.
Yeah. Yeah. The traffic would certainly indicate that too. Well, it's every person for themselves trying to hang a left onto Front Street this morning. Wow. Yeah. Anyway, so we're talking about today, before we get into that, though, transitions. In the disclosure, you probably heard that we are now independent advisor representatives or a representative of LPL Financial. That decision came about 6 weeks or so ago, maybe a bit earlier than that. And we've been, the last month, transitioning our clients over to LPL. Frankly, because the people above us, to put it shortly, couldn't come to an agreement with Schwab. Schwab was not willing to work with the people above us, so they started shopping months ago And LPL said, we will grant your clients all the discounts afforded that TD offered. And we said, let's do it. So put simply, we're moving our clients to LPL. And we appreciate those of you who are joining us in that. And boy, authorizing paperwork and all the rest, we're in the middle of it. We're about two-thirds of the way there. And surprisingly smooth so far.
Smooth.
So good.
We are in the middle of it. And just shout out to our staff, Prout Financial Design staff. Yeah. They're working so hard and doing such a great job.
Yeah. They are. Much appreciated.
And that is our slim down disclaimer that we are using today. The previous ones from previous weeks was pretty lengthy. So we're excited to be able to get it more concise.
Yeah. Thank you, Steve, for redoing that, too. I think we cut almost half off of what had been there before. So much appreciation. While leaving an IRA to charity can make sense. Now, I even said can. The title of the article, Why Leaving an IRA to a Charity Makes Sense, in the June newsletter of Ed Slott, written by Dennis J. Prout, CFP.
Woohoo!
Is the guest IRA expert.
So that's being seen by people where? All over?
Across the world.
Across the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
You bet. Yeah. It's a newsletter we reference every month. And often, as you know, our listeners, our loyal listeners, you know, we're constantly looking at this as a source of radio material. So I am honored, so are we, I'll say that, being chosen to have an article in here. Lots of back and forth. Time frames are always interesting. But why leaving an IRA to charity makes sense, and we also talk about other issues related to that, other assets that you might give to charity. So first of all, question begs, are you charitably minded? Well, I don't know, am I? You know, do you enjoy giving some funds, whether it's to Father Fred, the Grand Traverse Conservancy, whatever it might be, to help them do for you what you can't do on your own? Interesting, eh? So for the way that they can help people, help situations, work on projects, do things, again, leveraging your funds in ways that you might not have previously been able to do, and help yourself financially. What if it is as yesterday, the couple saying, we got to give just a bit more because we don't want to be in that higher tax bracket. And our accountant, in this case, John Sluice, said, you're really on the edge. Well, how are they going to handle this? By doing the QCD, increasing their giving through their IRA a bit, by giving a bit more to charity this year than they did last. So you may be surprised when you get to retirement about how much income you have. Well, if I would have known I'd have this much income, we should have retired earlier, my dear. You know, that sort of thing. You're liquidating assets, perhaps. You're still consulting. People are still paying you for what's in that noggin of yours, if you will. Okay? So because they may be doing that, and you are experiencing that higher income, and a required minimum distribution may be one of the last things you're looking for. Well, I don't know that it'd be one of the last things. But do I want all of that? And because many can't deduct it from their taxes, the amounts that you give to charity, all of a sudden not having it is the same as deducting it. What does that mean? Well, if you shift that income over to that charity, it's not considered income for you. A magic thing. So that's the QCD, which we've talked about before. That's one way to think about this. Another way, a great example. Well, first of all, let's start at the very beginning, shall we? Many people accumulate large sums of money in their IRA during their lifetime, much more than they spend in retirement. A gentleman 2 days ago looked at me like I was from Mars when I suggested he might contribute a portion of his IRA to charity. Honestly, he'd never considered that. That's why you're listening to us.
There was a guy years ago who, I think the first time I remember you bringing up QCD, called. He goes, that's brilliant. I had no idea. And I know he's given to local charities as a result.
Well, awesome.
Yeah.
So to the extent that we can push the envelope, sometimes you may need to listen with bated breath. What's he talking about? You know, that sort of thing. I doubt that. But you know what I'm saying. This is a little edgy for some, perhaps. That's all right. What is the best choice for a beneficiary? For those who are receiving the funds, we'll just use this word, when you die. To inherit the remainder at the owner's death. Spouse? Children? Often, or I'll just qualify this, sometimes none of the above. Naming one or more charities to inherit an IRA can be a better decision. What's more, the SECURE Act, SECURE 2.0 as they reference it, 10-year rule has made this tactic even more effective. The 10-year rule, yes, if your children inherit your IRA, they have to deplete it in 10 years. 10 years.
So for traditional IRAs, where everything comes out, it's taxed as income. That's what we're addressing.
It's fully taxable. And you have grown it over the years. You were able to take deductions because you put the money in, whether it was your 401k, 403b, or other retirement account. Those funds have since gone to your IRA in this particular example. Best way to give, possibly, is that QCD right up front. Now, taking a different tack, for instance, as mentioned in the article, if you're younger than the RMD age or age 70 and a half, whichever applies to you, you can always gift appreciated stock. If Jill bought XYZ stock at $20 a share many years ago, and those shares are now trading at $60, after an extended bull market, they really are not worth $60 a share to Jill, should she liquidate.
Why they're not worth $60 to Jill?
Assuming an effective income tax rate of 30% federal and state and net income surtax, the resulting $12 tax hit approximately, assuming a 30% tax, means, and the $40 gain, means she's actually at $48 in net value on that stock. So $12 has disappeared in the full value of that account.
Because of the taxes.
Because of the tax. In essence, 20% of the total.
Mm-hmm.
It's not all taxable, but 20%. Well, potentially a better way to give to charity than writing the check is to give the appreciated stock, which some of our clients do. I've owned that bank stock forever. I want to help the charity. There's a building program. There's a program of, you know, single mom. Many recognize that charity here locally. Whatever charity, maybe it's your church as well. They're doing this thing, and I want to help them. What's the best way to do that? It may not be writing a check from that account that's earning zero right now anyway. Are you sure you want to give that? Maybe you want to give the stock that's appreciated fully, perhaps, in light of where you're at tax-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And also giving-wise. All right? So QCD is the next issue. Now, the other part that's been added under SECURE 2.0 is for people who qualify for the QCD, it means you're 70 and a half, have money in an IRA, a traditional IRA. The second tier, according to this article, is the ability to gift up to $50,000 to a split interest entity. And when talking to a specific charity, namely Hillsdale, about this very issue, they said, you know, we've been lobbying Congress for years, for decades, for this gift, this gifting strategy, and finally we got it. What does this mean? You can give up to $50,000 to a charitable gift annuity from your IRA and then draw income at the range, in the range of 6 to 7.5% from that same charitable annuity for both you and your spouse. So if you want to give long term, you just don't want to give in the short term, and you like the idea of a guaranteed income, that could be a great way to turn that into an income for yourself or selves.
I love this idea.
Wait,
isn't that cool?
You're getting income while you're living, and then you're able to give it away when you die.
When you pass away.
Pass away, yeah.
Can you no tax.
Explain that again.
So let's say you're 72 years old, Ron.
Okay.
You want to help St. Jude's Children's Hospital.
Okay.
You're not sure how to do that. And you're relatively confident, though, you're going to have enough money in your IRA. But you're not sure. And you love the idea of guaranteed income from that account at 6%. Mm. That's guaranteed for your life if the charity is able to continue to make the payments. So that's the only caveat to this. The charity has to
make the payments to what?
To you. They're paying you for having gifted that asset to them. That's the charitable gift annuity. So the way that works
you give them
money,
a lump sum.
They in return.
How about give us an example? How much money?
$20,000.
You give them $20,000.
They in turn, because you've talked with them obviously about wanting to consider a charitable gift annuity. Well, you've gone through that process, perhaps with you and your spouse. Yes, we'd love to give that to them in the long term, but we want income now. How could we do that? That's the charitable gift annuity. There's no administration cost to it. They, in return, then pay you income for life. Well, what if we only live 2 years? That's the other risk. That money then goes to the charity, the lump sum that you put in there.
So
what if you live 20 years? Then even then, they have to continue making income payments to you.
How do they make money on it?
They make money in the long term because you're giving them assets in the long term. That simply means that that asset reverts to them at you or your spouse's death.
So how do they know they'll make money? Because they're going to pay you 6%,
right,
for maybe a long time.
Yes.
And then in the end, they get the bulk that you gave them. You're saying that the bulk that you gave them is going to earn a higher interest rate? Is that how
That's what they're hoping for.
Okay.
Given their overall portfolio,
okay,
they're thinking they're going to be able to make approximately 6% on that portfolio. And it's a huge portfolio, obviously, of billions for most of these entities. And it's simply a way for them to help you and to be helped in the long term. Because they're using actuarial tables based on the average life expectancy. At your age and at your extremely good health, Ron, it might be 25 years.
Okay, so that's interesting. What do you call that again?
A charitable gift annuity.
That's new?
That's new. You heard it here first.
Just starting this year.
Just starting this year.
Charitable gift
December
annuity.
29th.
Now, there are other charitable entities you can give to called the Charitable Remainder Annuity Trust or the Charitable Remainder Unit Trust. But those have such significant, generally, costs for administration, they don't make sense for these dollar amounts. So when speaking to these charities, they said, you know, we've been lobbying for years. Finally, they threw us a bone. That's how they reference this particular situation.
Because it wasn't allowed before.
Correct. This is brand new.
Mm-hmm.
So in essence, you can give any amount in a given year to the charity, purchase, in essence, a charitable gift annuity, and receive income back for the long-term goal, if you will, that at you and then your spouse's death, in this case, if you're both collecting income or one of your deaths, the full corpus or whatever left in that account then goes to the charity. But in the meantime, you get a guaranteed income for the rest of your life.
Is that negotiable or is it always 6%?
Well, it's negotiable. It's going to be somewhat negotiable, but it's based on your age.
Okay.
So the older you are, the higher the income is. When you're 82, 85, or whatever, the approximate income is going to be about 7 to 7.5%. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, pretty sick. Not bad. I mean, really, if it's at 7% guaranteed for life, that can be helpful.
Yeah.
$50,000 at that rate would generate almost $300 a month from that one source. So it can be a small pension for some.
Mm-hmm.
And again, a way to give to that charity in the long term. Could be helpful.
Is there a certain age for a client that this would make sense or any age?
Well, you have to be 70 and a half.
70 and a half.
Yes. So any year in which you do a QCD, this is allowed, but you can only do it once.
Once
that's
and
another
done.
Gotcha, if you will.
Yeah.
Whether it's $10,000, $5,000, $50,000, one time.
I'm going to be talking today about Vanguard has a publication they put out, and it's called The Market Perspectives. So this is views of the Vanguard Investment Strategy Group, and this is from May 17th. And so some of the key highlights that they go over in the article is the first one, we now see the Fed terminal rate in a range of 5.25 to 5.5, just a quarter of a percentage point higher than the current rate target. We now expect next month's projected rate hike to be the last in the series. And so I'm like, okay, the Fed terminal rate, what does that mean? So I looked it up. So the terminal Fed fund rate, also known as the terminal rate or the neutral federal funds rate, is the interest rate level that the Federal Reserve believes is consistent with a balanced economy in the long run. So what they're saying is this is what the Fed sees as where they want the economy to be. The economy will be where they want to be if they have this rate in mind, looking at slowing inflation and all these other elements. So
controlling growth in a lot of respects, because it's been growing too fast, according to them.
So yeah. I sort of see it as like that's the highest rate that they want to get to. They think that's going to be able to address some of their concerns in the economy right now. The group also foresees an unemployment rate around 4.5 at the end of 2023. That is the lower end of what they projected in January, which was 4.5 to 5%. So they're sort of pulling back a little bit on what they think the unemployment rate will be.
The economy's been surprisingly strong still through all of this headwind. Yeah.
And the final highlight is another quarter of broad-based decline in business investments suggests a softening in the broader economy. So they see the economy sort of pulling back from all these different changes, the interest rates and all these different things. The pressures of those are sort of softening up the economy. The next part of the article starts going region by region around the world, and they start with the U.S. And their comment there is, in mid-March, the last time the Fed issued rate projections, policymakers foresaw no rate cuts by year-end. Futures pricing suggested a starkly different view in the markets, a bit more than 70 basis points, or 0.7%, of rate cuts by year-end. By mid-May, futures prices had changed modestly, involving about 60 basis points. So that's a little complicated there, but what they're saying is what the futures market or what the market thinks is going to happen is different than what the Fed is sort of the path that the Fed is on. People are thinking the rates are already going to come down in the future, and the Fed's still raising rates. We sort of have a dichotomy there.
Exactly.
I have a question for Dennis regarding this, and Heidi, if you want. So what? Who cares? That's what I'm saying is like, what? How does that impact us and the economy when you look at 0.7%? The interest rate might go up or might go down. How does that impact our investments or house payments or the economy at large? I mean, what? I mean, does it affect businesses, how fast they can expand or can't? What?
You bet. It's always interesting, isn't it? No, we were talking about perspectives in terms of history. This rate isn't crazy for us at all, you know,
right.
Given where we grew up with, if you will, mortgage rates at 10% at least. And now the fact that they're, 6.5 and 7 is not crazy at all, but it is certainly for the younger crowd because they're not used to this higher interest rate environment. But it simply points up the fact that they're trying to control, the Fed's trying to control the budget in essence, because they put so much money into the economy. They're trying to control inflation through this, and it's been very a difficult row for them because so many people have already locked in their rates. They've had a difficult time putting some controls back in the significant growth in the economy. They don't want the economy to grow too fast because we've got inflation rearing its head. Anyone who goes to the grocery store, this is what they're paying attention to. So the Fed's interest rate is managed, but it means something to the overall economy. As interest rates rise, costs go up, the economy could slip into recession and not have a soft landing, which is the biggest concern, Ron. So how is the economy going to respond to these rising interest rates? And previously, historically, some of that response has been very volatile. That's why all these prognosticators are looking at this, and that's why you see these folks betting on interest rates declining here. And I think that's hilarious because they have a very different view than the Fed does.
Right, because the Fed's still raising, and they're saying, right. Oh, they're going to lower it.
Mm. Oh, yeah. They're convinced that the economy is going to become weaker relatively quickly. So they think the Fed starts cutting rates. That's where this comes in.
Huh. That's the commodities bets is what you're saying. Who is that? Who is that, well, that predicts the rates will not go up?
Oh, well, the rates, the futures. So yeah, people looking the futures, in the future, okay. People yeah, betting yeah, on what's going to happen okay, 6 months, a year from now, versus the people who are doing things today.
Yeah. So. Those who are buying futures contracts, they're betting on interest rates through T-bonds, other instruments where they bet on those rates using significant leverage and can lose more than they invest, which that's why we don't talk much about that.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And just the reason that it cares and it's of interest and we talk about it even on this show is because so much of our retirement investments are in the market. And what that means is you're buying stock or you're buying mutual funds that buy stock or bonds. And all those companies, we want them to be profitable because that makes the investor more profitable. And so these different pressures help you decide where you want to put your money. Where do you think is the best place to go?
Right. Where should we be allocated? That's what's made T-bills, frankly, so popular because all of a sudden they're yielding 5% now. Mm. You bet. Mm. Go, Heidi.
So Vanguard's own view, so this committee, is that the Fed will not cut its key rate target before 2024 because of its need to keep the policy sufficiently restrictive to bring inflation down. So they're saying the Fed is looking more at inflation. They're more worried about that than lowering interest rates in the future. So and that's what Vanguard's view of that situation is. And then we move into what's happening in Europe. A lot of funds that we invest in, you know, you might have an international portion. So this would be the impact on that. So over in Europe, they have the European Central Bank, and they call that the ECB. And interest rates are not sufficiently restrictive to tame inflation right now. The ECB raised its deposit facility, or its terminal rate.
Discount rate. Same thing, yeah.
By 25 basis points to 3.25%. Although this was the seventh consecutive hike, it marked a slowing in the rate increases because they were increasing them a half percentage point or 0.5, and this time they only raised it 0.25. So you see a little pullback there. The president, Christine Lagarde, made clear in her post-announcement news conference that the rate hiking cycle is not over yet. So you can see that they sort of are with the Fed in raising rates right now.
Yes.
We expect the ECB to raise the deposit facility to a range between 3.75 to 4%, but they believe that rates will not be cut in 2023. Then we move on to the United Kingdom or England. Inflation, the labor market, and the overall economic activity have been stronger than expected. We continue to anticipate a recession later this year, although much shallower than we had previously thought. And that is a spokesman from Vanguard's investment strategy called Roxanne Spitznagel, I believe is her name. So they're just thinking that if there is this recession, if a recession happens, it's not going to be as bad as they previously thought it would be. So they're sort of, people are easing off on some of the predictions they made at the beginning of the year. All right, and then moving on to China. Now, one thing I just had to point out with China is the data you get out of China, you never really know. Is this really accurate? Has it been influenced by maybe the Chinese government or some other sources there?
Always suspect.
Always suspect. But they have a stronger GDP at 4.5% for the first quarter. And although strong tourism and hospitality data from the May Labor Day holidays shows that there is pent-up demand from coming out of COVID, and it's carrying into the second quarter, four recent developments cast doubt on the sustainability of the recovery in China. And those four things that they point out are the service sector activity has outpaced the production of goods, public investment has outpaced private investment, housing completions have increased, but housing starts have declined, and the overall unemployment rate has fallen. Youth unemployment has climbed. So they're just saying there are some things out there in the Chinese economy that indicate that maybe things aren't as rosy as previously predicted.
Somebody wondered on our text line, hey, I thought we were already in a recession, aren't we? So,
no, it's a recession. We're right on the edge of it, but it's not been qualified yet by any definition. Although the previous recession, I don't think was ever fully declared by our own government. There was a lot of argument about that.
What is the definition?
They wanted to change the definition when they said, "Here we are, two quarters of negative growth," and that's not a recession anymore.
Yeah,
there's a new definition. Yeah.
Right. Well.
Sometimes they say it takes months afterwards to figure out if there really was a recession.
Yeah, because the isn't it interesting? The information has been so suspect that our own federal government is declaring, because there have always been these huge adjustments to it. So it just makes it difficult, but generally it's still considered two quarters of declining gross domestic product. It means our economy is coming down, and it's not the case yet. Mm. The production is still relatively strong for our overall economy.
All right, we had one more area, if you're up for that.
Let's do that.
That was emerging markets, and this is actually the more positive part of the article. They see that emerging markets have gone through some of this and are on their way back, especially emerging Asia will lead the way in 2023. They said inflation in these markets has largely peaked, and emerging markets will likely cut rates before the developed market central banks. So for developed countries, that we're behind them is what they're saying, that emerging markets might cut their interest rates before the more developed countries do. And so I think that's a little bit of positivity out of this article, but sort of a worldwide view of where they think things are right now.
You bet. Deanne, stats.
Absolutely. In the 3 months ending on May 24th, the 50 largest stocks in the S&P 500 by market cap were up an average of 9.2%, while the 50 50 smallest stocks were down an average of 10.8%. Over the same three-month span, the seven largest S&P 500 stocks were all higher and up an average of 24.7%, while the seven smallest were all lower and down by an average of 34.5%, and that source is Bespoke.
Any idea what these seven largest stocks are, Ron?
I was going to ask you, why are the big stocks up and the little ones down? Alphabet, Facebook,
Microsoft.
Right. Fruit.
Apple.
Ooh. Oh, Apple, yeah. Apple, that's five or six right there.
He was giving you a clue.
Is it all tech?
It's all tech. Yeah. You know, AI, artificial intelligence driving this.
None of them make anything.
They don't?
They don't have
a particular product.
They don't get any natural resources and turn them into tangible goods.
Stuff, yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's interesting.
It is. In response to better-than-expected earnings and raised guidance, shares of NVIDIA surged over 26% at the open of trading on May 25th and finished the day up 24.3%. NVDA gained $184 billion in market value on the day, but came up just shy of Apple's record one-day gain for a U.S. company of $190.9 billion on November 10th, 2022. And that source is Reuters.
AI.
Radical. Mm-hmm. AI. And we had an extensive conversation with our own economic consultant, Rob. This next week, we're going to be talking about the impact of AI. He says he believes that AI will have the a similar impact to the impact that railroads had on our economy and our world and in the United States of America. He said it was a dynamic. It was a huge sea change shift, if you will, when the railroads appeared in terms of transportation and the ease and economics of it at that point. Well, he says AI is going to change our lives so dramatically we can't even fathom. It's so dramatic that he himself said that he spent 12 hours per day over the three-day weekend analyzing the changes wrought by the railroads versus what he sees in AI. And he said he's never seen an increase in, and he's been analyzing markets since the 60s, in a company's earnings estimate like NVIDIA, given the impact of AI. So
it's fascinating to hear his passion behind it and
the research. Mark Cuban was at the Detroit Regional Chamber on Mackinac Island yesterday, tech entrepreneur, Shark Tank.
Yeah.
Similar thing. He told the crowd there, he goes, if you don't know AI, you better start looking into it. Will heavily impact all of you and your businesses. Mm-hmm. So there it is.
Yeah, interesting. For sure.
Artificial intelligence.
Scary and interesting all at the same time, right?
A whopping 82% of recent or potential home sellers said they feel locked in to their current home because of a low mortgage rate. Gen Z, 97%, Millennials, 87%, and Gen X, 87%. Homeowners feel universally locked in, but most baby boomers said they don't feel locked in, likely because this older age group was built up most of the equity in the homes over the years, and that source is Realtor.com.
Yeah, way to used to see the supply change in the home market when interest rates start to come down. It's going to be, I think it's going to be dynamic.
Well, it was like we mentioned earlier, the baby boomers, they remember, their parents having a 15% mortgage, so five doesn't seem so bad.
No,
exactly.
Not at all.
Over the last 100 years, the Dow Jones Industrial Average has averaged a gain of 0.44% during June, with positive returns half of the time. Over the last 20 years, though, June has been much weaker for the Dow, as it has averaged a decline of 0.52%, with gains just 40% of the time. In terms of both the average change and consistency of gains, no other month has been weaker, and that source is Bespoke.
Why do you think that is?
I have no idea.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Great question. Some month has to be the weakest, right? I mean,
given the strength of the
others. Maybe everybody goes on vacation and nobody's paying attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it is June 1st.
It'd be interesting, the trading volume. So many go on vacation.
Yeah.
Roughly 38 million family caregivers provided an estimated 36 billion hours of care in 2021. More than 40% of family caregivers report negative financial impacts due to their responsibilities, and the need for caregiving led to the loss of more than 650,000 jobs in 2021, or a negative economic impact of around $44 billion, according to Blue Cross Blue Shield, and that source is AARP.
Talk about a tough subject, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we were talking about this. Deanne mentioned this. You know, we ought to do a radio show on that. And honestly, I was just thinking about the very same thing. A gentleman 2 days ago in our office said, you know, when I retired, I didn't know I would be spending most of my time caring for two aging adults in my own family. He said, but just the management of them, their care, all the rest, taking up most of his time right now. That's the reality of what's going on for some.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And their parents, you bet.
I want Dennis to get back to his article, but before he does, just if you would like to read his article, please go to our website, proutfinancialdesign.com, and you will find it in the Learning Library tab under Published Articles, and you can find that article for our own author, Dennis Prout.
Thanks, Dan. Mm-hmm. Great. So how much time do we have here left here, Ron? About 2 minutes.
Yes, sir.
Awesome. So briefly, the plans mentioned include some savvy ideas for lifetime philanthropy. In addition, charitably minded taxpayers often wish to make charitable bequests. At my death, I'd like to give $5,000 to XYZ. Hmm. Well, the better way may be to simply do this through your IRA. by naming that charity or charities a partial or fully contingent beneficiary on your IRA. So as the last chapter, if you will, in this giving strategy, you may want to name as a partial beneficiary, if your custodian allows this, so you'll want to check with the company that holds your IRA, could I name XYZ charity, in this example, as a 10% contingent beneficiary on my IRA? In essence, if your spouse is first, she gets it, he gets it first, they could, and really, if they liked at that point, disclaim that portion and have that go directly to the charity. So that's another way to really leverage the power of the fully taxable IRA by giving to charity. So the one left in this instance can see that money go to the charity that you always wanted it to go to anyway. Some custodians require a 100% naming of that contingent beneficiary to the charity. Those advanced planning ideas should be had with a qualified professional, which we often are a part of for the team that you may have for your own finances. And we love talking about these subjects and how you might leverage what's there for a higher purpose.
Well, and it is June 1st, and that means soon it will be the first ever Lunch and Learn at Prout Financial Design.
Oh, you bet.
Absolutely.
Yes, we're teaching a class on Social Security and Disability.
On June 21st.
June 21st. And if you are interested, call our office, 231-947-3992. That class is already half full, I think.
Yep.
You betcha.
So call and make a reservation.
Yep.
All righty.
Love to have you.
At proutfinancialdesign.com. Dennis Prout, Heidi Cartwright, D.N. Jennings, thank you all.